Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Teeing It Up with C and V, the Metro Detroit sports podcast. I'm your host, Connor, as always, with my co-host, Vladdy, the V and C and V. Vladdy's back from a trip over the pond. How's it hanging, man? How's the trip?
Trip was amazing. I'm sure I'll be able to kind of detail it in more in person, instead of kind of going on forever here. But great trip. I was honestly impressed with kind of France and the French people, which is saying a lot if you know me and my opinions of that country and those people. But had a lot of fun. It seems like I got the best of the weather. I was talking to my uncle who's still there, and the last couple of days have been miserable as they're still there. So I made the most out of it. It was great to kind of go see some more new places, kind of watch a little bit of tennis. It's always interesting because it's kind of a different dynamic than the US, where when you buy like a tennis ticket for a tournament, you have access to the entire grounds. It's not just, oh, you walk up and you sit in your seat like a basketball game or a football event, and that's the only thing you can watch. You can walk around. There's multiple courts, there's different things you can see. So great time. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Can't wait to plan another trip. But I'm sure you'll hear more about it when we see each other. I don't have much else. I watch zero sports, so when we're talking about kind of the on court or on field action, I will be a little bit more pedestrian. But how are you?
I'm good, man. Last week of class for me, and then 10 days, and then finals. So the weather's been great here the last few days, or at least this so far this week, and it looks like that's going to hold for the foreseeable future, which is always great in Michigan. It does kind of feel like Masters week, which we'll get into later in the show, does kind of bring around is like the first sense of good weather. I feel like that the second week of April. It's a lot easier to feel good about yourself and happy about life when the sun's out and it's above 60 degrees. So,
Agreed, agreed.
we got a couple of different topics, kind of a mixed bag of topics. We're going to talk about some college basketball today, obviously the Final Four and national championship, as well as some coaching moves. And then we'll get into the women's. That's right, the women's Final Four and national championship kind of stole the show and made its own headlines, I'd argue. This weekend, as far as being the more popular brand this week, but again, something we'll get into in more depth in a bit, and then we'll do a Masters preview to end the show. So, starting with the Final Four, exactly what I think most people thought. There were two big spreads and there were two big games as far as points wise. To start with the first game, NC State and Purdue. I think that game was exactly what we thought it was going to be, as far as why am I now blanking on the big guy's name?
DJ Burns, some
DJ
respect
Burns,
on
sorry.
it.
Kind of couldn't ever get in a groove. It just felt like whatever moves and post moves he had was just not enough against Zach Edey. They only scored 50 points. They didn't shoot the ball well besides that. And for Purdue, which is, I'll get into more for the national championship. The cast around Zach Edey wasn't exactly amazing. They obviously only scored 61 points, but a game that was never exactly close. Didn't really have great offense. Purdue, I think, had three over the backs. Like it was a relatively sloppy game. NC State kind of hacked and whacked their way into foul trouble. And Zach Edey, like we said, was just too much of a matchup for the destiny run that was NC State.
You mentioned the foul trouble. How did DJ Burns do? I know that's one thing we kind of talked about where we felt like maybe he could pick up two fouls in 25 seconds and be sitting on the floor. Did something like that happen with him or no?
No, but he did. I do think he didn't play as many minutes as maybe he wanted to, because of fouls, but it was not something where he got two quick ones and it
Okay.
was out. But he did have two in the first half, and he sat out at the end of the first half. So it
Mm-hmm.
was an issue. It was maybe not to the extreme that I think we thought it might get to, the way he was taking fouls earlier in the tournament. But it was, I guess, somewhat of an issue in this game. And it obviously, when you only score 50 points, it's and your top scorer is out, you're not going to be able to beat Purdue.
Yeah.
They were too much. Honestly, The Final Four get two games themselves were a bit of duds. Like I said earlier, they were exactly what people thought they were going to be. You could argue, we'll get into the next game. UConn ends up beating Purdue, sorry, Alabama. Alabama probably played one of the best game they could. Came out shooting hot. It was a tie game with 12 minutes left. And it just kind of felt like they ran out of gas. And UConn, as we'll get into Dan Hurley and the magnificent run they're on, just was A, too much for them in the end. And B, just kind of had the perfect game plan for them. I think Dan Hurley said they're going to make their shots, but we weren't going to let them take enough threes for them to ever be able to, sustain offense with us for a full 60 or 40 minutes. Sorry. And that's what happened. I think they only shot, like, I think they were five or six threes below their season average. They shot super well, got a little cold at the end, like I said, and it really was a good game plan that starts with obviously defense or rebounding, but it also starts with hands up and not letting guys get second chances or even getting first chances from the 3-point line. And you knew they were going to make their shots. And like I said, Alabama couldn't have played a better game for the first 28 minutes of that one. And again, it was just too much. UConn, who we'll get into in a second here, was too much for everybody for the last 2 years, 12 and 0 or 11 and 0 at that point against the spread. And kind of what I expected after what was 28 minutes of entertainment is basically all you got in the Final Four games, because Purdue, NC State stayed at like 7 to 15 for most of that game. But Alabama competed right up until the, early parts of the second half. And then UConn was just too much. They have five starters. Klingon inside just too much. I don't really think Alabama had much to say about that in general. They kind of just did what Alabama was going to do, and it worked for, like I said, 28 minutes, but in the end, not enough.
Yeah, the only thing I really heard about that was that Alabama, I think, shot what 45 or 48% from deep, and still it just ran out of gas. So, what are you going to do against that? Like you say, that you can't shoot much better than 45 or 48, whatever it was, from deep, and against that juggernaut for an extended period of time.
Yeah, it's so interesting because the thing I mentioned about they're going to make their threes, but we're just not going to let them take as many as they want to beat us is such an interesting thing because obviously, like, I don't know, I didn't play basketball. I don't know X's and O's of basketball, like, the greatest coach in college basketball right now, but it's such a creative way, I think, that like I wouldn't necessarily be the first thing I think of in terms of stopping a team from shooting. It's just, oh, they got to shoot less. Even though it makes total sense, but it just wasn't the first thing I thought of when he said that after the game.
Absolutely, that's a very unique way of going about it. Yeah, I don't have anything else to say. I was asleep for all of the games, so we move on to
Yeah, the final was an absolute dud as well, to be
the
honest. And
final.
UConn, I think that game stayed between 8 and about 17 for most of it. It was never close. Purdue, again, talk about creative. This one wasn't so creative. I think this is what the game plan was the entire time, is that Zach Edey was going to get his. We just had to shut down the rest of them, and that's exactly what they did. Braden Smith had a couple of threes early, but other than that, he missed a lot of open shots. Fletcher Loyer did nothing. Shane Gillis did nothing off the bench. Lance did nothing. It was really only Zach Edey, especially in the second half. I believe he scored 37 of their 60 points. So they truly did just shut down everybody that was not named Zach Edey. And I will say, Zach Edey in the first half, I thought it'd be interesting seeing a 7-foot-2 Klingon, especially early. And it's hard to say this because the guy scored 37 points, but I think even like just watching the game, he wasn't necessarily 100% comfortable like normal, because the first, 5, 6 minutes of that game, when he would back down, and I think he just wasn't used to like him moving his elbow and there just being hitting someone's shoulder and not just with hitting air or someone's head. And like he was like, oh shit, there's a guy that's like eye to eye with me right now, or not necessarily eye to eye, he's still got 2 inches on him. But I think that played a small and like just enough of a factor to for he probably played an A minus game instead of an A plus game, or an A game instead of an A plus game. And that, along with the game plan that was executed so well, in that everyone else had just an absolute flat game. And for UConn, it's a team that four of their five starters were on the all tournament team, basically Zach Edey and four of the five UConn starters. All five starters had over five rebounds in the game. It's just a true team effort, and they can get you in different ways. They hit threes when they need to. They have a 7-foot monster down low that can get you points down low, and they play hard defensively, obviously, with Dan Hurley. Now, the last thing, as far as actually mentioning the game, because there really wasn't that many eventful things to even really talk about. One is, I was happy it wasn't such a whistle fest, which it can be with 2 7-footers, and specifically Zach Edey. And that's been a problem for college basketball fans all year with him, for the past 3 years, to be honest with him. It wasn't necessarily that whistle fest. I don't even think both teams were in the bonus for definitely not the first half, but maybe not even the second half. To be honest, the last couple of minutes, it was 11:30, and I was half watching at that point. At that one, once it was a 15-point game. So take that with a grain of salt, but I was happy it was not such a whistle fest. It was a relatively physical game, especially down low. Edey had to earn everything. And second is, did you see the clip of Dan Hurley? He's a psychopath, man. Did you see him grab his player and during the middle of the play gets a technical, and he goes like, "What? What?" I think he just was so engrossed in the play that he just didn't even realize like what the severity of what he just did.
Yeah, so I didn't see that video. I saw videos of him losing his mind at officials. I saw videos of him at in
Yelling
the
at Zach
middle of the
Edey.
paint yelling at Zach Edey. And you're right, that's lunatic behavior. And you know what? Part of that is who he is. He's a very
Right.
flamboyant coach. I mean, we've seen other videos of him in the past, like he's sitting there jawing with his players and he turns around and shakes the other coach's hand just from like 100 to zero to professionalism real quick. But I did note those two things. It's like, you know what? The officials things, it is what it is. Every coach is a lobbyist in his own right. He might just be a little bit more flamboyant about doing so. But I actually took some note to that Zach Edey thing. You can't bark at another team's
Yeah,
player like that. You
agreed.
can't come onto the court, start pointing at him, screaming all that. You can't scream like that. I thought that was outrageous.
Yeah, I agreed. And it's kind of, it's, I am not like, you either kind of love him or hate him, but I'm gonna contrast that statement by literally just saying, I don't know how I feel about him because he is so polarizingly entertaining, which is good for us to talk about, but like, I'm just not the biggest fan in general. Maybe it's because he wins and it works, but like we root for a guy who's a big, very animated on the sidelines as well. So like, am I being a hypocrite by saying I don't like his animation? Maybe, but yeah, that's my kind of take on Dan Hurley. But to kind of get into the big picture of UConn in general, there's 6 national championship in, I believe, 25 years.
Correct.
They now have more national championships than Duke
Yes.
and North Carolina.
I thought it was Kansas, but I could be wrong.
Kansas. I want to say the only two that have more now are Kentucky and UCLA.
Yeah, UCLA is obviously number one at 11. I think Kentucky has eight.
Eight.
And actually, you know, now that I'm thinking about it, I think UConn might have tied somebody at six. And obviously, you're
Maybe
right. They
that's
have,
North Carolina
yeah,
now.
they have more than Duke because Duke has five. And then, yeah, the Kansas UNC thing, I know it's flip-flop one way or the other. I'm not really entirely sure, but yeah. They go back to back for the first time in almost 20 years since Florida. And then before that, I don't know how long it had been since another repeat champion, but the difference between this team and what some of the old teams did is just there's so much more player empowerment and player mobility in the modern day of college basketball that to be able to kind of not only kind of do over what you did before is, but to be better with it. Because this team, I think, was better than last year's team. Last year's team
Yeah.
kind of came from nowhere, and yeah, they butchered everyone in the tournament there. They were still a five seed that year. So this
Right.
team came in with all eyes on them, and they managed to pretty much exceed expectations. This is now two tournaments in a row where they have not played a game closer than 13 points. I think I looked at some stats for this entire tournament in 2024. They only trailed for 6 minutes and 22 seconds. They've just completely separated themselves from the rest of college basketball. And it's you mentioned earlier, they can do it in so many different ways. They're better on offense than you. They're better on defense than you. They're taller than you. They're faster than you. They're deeper than you. They're better coached than you. They're adaptable. They have experience. And now, obviously, maybe this changes because they're about to lose a ton of their guys. But let's say, unlike in Alabama or Purdue, the two teams they played in the Final Four, they're not one-trick ponies. Alabama, as you mentioned in kind of the recap, Nate Oates has said, "We're going to jack up more threes than you. We're going to make more threes than you. We're going to beat you that way." And you know what? To his credit, it's largely worked. They were number one overall seed in the previous season, and obviously they failed to kind of make that deeper run. They make the Final Four this year. There's obviously some winning basketball behind that philosophy. Then there's Purdue. It's we're gonna throw it to the giant. We're gonna have everyone else play a little bit of complimentary basketball. And as much shit as we gave Purdue for losing to those 14s and 15s and 16s over the last couple of years, made a title game this year with that style, and just they ran into something they were not prepared to deal with. And that's, I think, the magnificence of what this UConn and Dan Hurley team has done is they just play a different sport. The offense is beautiful. It kind of reminds me of the Golden State Warriors with all like the moving off the ball and the screens. Obviously, they don't jack threes like the Warriors do, but when they move the back, I was watching some highlights. All those backdoor cuts, Purdue couldn't find themselves with a map. They didn't know where their marks were. There were so many empty kind of layups, and there was a couple that Zach Edey I was actually able to kind of recover on and have some major swats just because he's 18 feet tall. But if he wasn't there, that could have been so much worse in terms of just the free baskets that they were giving up because they had no idea what was coming.
And you mentioned who knows where UConn's at because they'll lose so much. They lost 70% of their points from last year's national championship team and were still able to recover and do it again. And he's done it in a combination of, like you kind of alluded to, the transfer portal in this modern era and being able to replace so quickly, but also I mean, he's done it with freshmen. He's had impact freshmen both seasons. Stephon Castle, starter, played 12 points a game this year. He had Hawkins last year, who was a first round pick just outside of, I mean, maybe he was a lottery pick. I think he was somewhere in that 10 to 15 range. But he's done it both ways in that, in recruiting and through the transfer portal, which I guess is just a different version of recruiting at this point. So,
Yeah, so I actually wanted to say one thing. I really didn't know that they lost 70% of their points from last year to this year, because one of the things I had talked about was they're currently kind of slated, if you will, to lose all of their starting five and their sixth man from this year's team. And so like I'd kind of written that maybe you expect a down year before they kind of come back into a reload and kind of retool phase in 2026. But if this is something that they've kind of done before and they come through it again, who knows? Because this team right now, obviously, Hurley's already talked about it. He's like, we want the three-peat because that's unheard of. Obviously, that goes back to the John Wooden days, but we'll see what happens. I mean, I can't comfortably bet against them. I know Duke is bringing in the Avengers with their recruiting class, but after that, how am I supposed to say anything other than, yeah, well, I know what this guy can do. I know what everyone else can't, and that's compete with him.
You know who's bringing in the Avengers, speaking of that class, in that they're the most surprising team in the world, has the number two and number three recruits in the country. It's a Big Ten team. You want to guess?
If you're talking, it's not like Iowa or Nebraska or some shit, is it?
It's probably even more random.
What, Northwestern while we're at it?
Rutgers,
What?
the number two and number three recruits in the country, the two best recruits not named Cooper Flagg are going to Rutgers.
So that's Tergeron's not still the coach, is he?
I have no idea who the Rutgers coach is, to be honest.
I just remember kind of, I think I'm gonna say 4 or 5 years ago, but it might have even been more. It might have been kind of our very early years in college. But Rutgers was kind of nasty with Ron Harper, and that you couldn't really beat him at the rack. So I'm not totally shocked by that. I like you're right. They've been down the last couple of years. I'm kind of like what again from those years that I'm kind of thinking of whenever they were. But that's interesting.
Just saw, I just very interesting thing. And you look at it as like, I'm looking at the top 100 now, and UConn doesn't have a player in the top 30.
Yeah. Overrated. He'll
It is
find someone.
overrated. It just shows you where, how do you reload quickly here?
Oh yeah.
Well,
I
because
mean,
you know who had a great recruit. This kind of lends itself into it because you know who did have two top 15 players, is Kentucky, and I doubt they do anymore. Obviously, that's the big, probably the biggest news. First of all, actually, let's recap this tournament. So I'm curious. I think this tournament, as far as a grade, gets a C minus. I think this is a tournament you'll forget about very quickly, as you'll remember this as the back to back for UConn. And that's kind of about it. I don't think it was like garbage because you still had like Golkey, you still had NC State. But overall, I think it was lackluster and slightly below average, and as far as moments and remembrance.
so I'm going to be a little more lenient on the term. I'm going to give him a C plus, but I know what you're saying. I also didn't watch the Final Four and the title game, so maybe I missed some of the boredom where you expect to see fireworks, and that maybe plays into your kind of grade where mine might not. But you're right. There was a couple of nice stories with some kind of with some lower seeds making, you know, deep runs in terms of NC State or just some individual upsets. Yale, Oakland. I was kind of I'll give it a nicer grade than you just because I was happy with the way the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight played out. I think we did get some good games there, but you're correct. There wasn't really any iconic buzzer beaters, if you will. There wasn't any kind of just true. I don't think there's really true iconic individual moments the way you go back and like you'll remember. I mean, Virginia, where a dude loses his mind, throws the ball 60 feet in the air, even though there's
Oh,
like
yeah.
10 seconds left. You don't have a, I mean, you know what I'm trying to say. It's just one of
Right.
those where I think this was a collection of there was good games being played and there were good stories overall with, again, DJ Burns thing, he became America's player. That was great. But in terms of individual moments, it was definitely lacking.
Yeah. But back to John Calipari, because he's the big story here.
Yes.
After 15 years as at the helm of one of the best jobs in basketball. He takes the job at Arkansas after Arkansas's coach Eric Musselman goes to USC. Very interesting. I think it's the greatest thing Cal could have ever done personally. I think it's chess when other people are playing checkers. To go to know, and I this is after I saw his video, and I actually believe him and think that's correct. In that it wasn't necessarily that he was, it's tough to say failing. I don't want to say failing. He was
You can
not
say
getting
failing.
the
He failing.
not
He was
not I wouldn't
failing.
say failing. I wouldn't say failing. Not getting the job done to the expectations of Kentucky.
That's failing.
But like you can't fire. I don't know. I think a guy that wins a national championship in basketball has a job for life at those schools. But like that's the problem, is like Kentucky was dealing with the fact that Kentucky can't do that and can't continue to do that, but also dealing with the fact that like this is the highest paid coach in basketball, and like he did for 10 years what the expectation was and more. So I know they had closed door meetings where they said they basically were like, yeah, we're gonna bring you back for 1 year. So in Cal's mind, I think it was just like, the message is clearly not getting across here. If this happens a year from now, I'm going to get fired and my stock isn't going to be as high. So I'm going to go and become not only the highest paid coach, because he already was, but I'm going to make even more money to go to a program with some expectations. I wouldn't say no, but nowhere near the expectations of Kentucky, which is arguably, is it the top job in basketball? I think it is.
It probably is. Can I just say a couple of things? First of all, I greatly disagree with you that he wasn't failing at Kentucky. Hadn't made a second weekend since 2019. I love sitting here ripping Izzo. It would be very hypocritical of me to not rip Cal for that as well. I think he was greatly failing at his job. And I think part of it, you mentioned the message is not getting across. I think his message became outdated, and as an older coach, he just refused to update it. He
Yeah.
it, it's not news that you can no longer win with a team of 18-year-olds. That ship sailed in 2018, 2019. That and he just refused to change his ways. Even
I wouldn't
coach.
say 2019. NIL was until COVID didn't happen until 2020. NIL didn't happen until 2021.
Yeah, but even before that, you kind of realized you weren't going to keep winning with the with those two. Like you look at Duke and kind of Duke post 2010, the teams that did things were the ones that had senior leadership. As much as we hate him, Grayson Allen became senior leadership. I know he was a freshman on the team that actually ended up winning the title,
That's
but
what I was going to say.
yeah, no, him
Team
staying
that won
around.
had two freshmen as their two best players, Grayson Allen and Jahlil Okafor.
Yeah, I agree. Villanova with older
Older
teams.
team. Yeah.
So I just think, I mean, North Carolina, older team.
Yep.
So I just think that, yes, you're right. The NIL, the transfer portal, all that stuff came around after the time period that I'm saying. But I think the game did change where the one and dones were great in the late 2000s, early 2010s, where kind of he was always dancing around and Drake showing up at their practices with John Wall, Boogie Cousins, they're running around with those guys. But I think then at some point people maybe realized, you know what? Talent's great, but I'm 22 year old. I'm 22 years old. I've got experience. This kid hasn't popped his first pimple yet. He hasn't gone through puberty. I can push him
Yeah.
around. It's
Well,
kind of like what Jet
so you
Golden
should
said.
even then so you should then even agree more with my take of that he's playing chess and checkers
Well,
before
I
he
was going to get to that.
fired,
I
he
was going
goes
to
and
get to
gets
that.
his bag.
I was going to get to that. The second part I was going to say is he actually getting paid more at Arkansas than he was at
Yes.
Kentucky?
Yeah.
That's insane.
I believe it's I want to say it was $1.5 million more per year, and he already made seven.
I thought he was at like 10.
No. He was at like 7.5. You know who the number two highest paid coach in basketball is?
Either Bill Self or Tom Izzo.
It's Tom Izzo, yeah.
Yeah, that's not shocking.
Bill Self is like 200K behind him, so
Yeah, but in any case, you are correct. Him leaving, and honestly, that helps Kentucky as well because there's no buyout for them. So now financially, that's easier for them to go poach whatever next coach they want. You're right. This is it. This is a move that benefits all parties. Kentucky gets to move on and maybe try and find a younger guy who can kind of embrace all of the tools at his disposal. And that I emphasize all because that is kind of what you need to do if you want to win now. You can't be the one trick pony. You mentioned the thing. He gets to go to a place where the expectations won't be as high, or maybe not won't be as high, but they won't be as immediately needed. You know, if he
Right.
goes to Arkansas and God forbid misses a tournament or loses a couple first weekends, he'll be able to say, well, I'm still laying the groundwork here. We're still
Right.
putting things together. So I understand that. But yeah, I think that if he continues to go with his approach of I'm going to chase 1 year guys with big NIL deals through Walmart or whatever that Chicken Tyson company was that we were talking about, if that's his
Yeah,
plan.
I heard it's the Tyson guys that he's actually like friends with, or has been friends with, is where that connection came
Yeah,
from.
and again, if that's his plan, if he wants to just do exactly what he did at Kentucky, except this time his players wear red, not blue, I don't think anything's going to change.
Yeah.
But if he decides to say, you know what, maybe I need a little bit of seasoned experience, some veterans on my team, alongside the young, talented guys who kind of have the magic, who can produce those moments that maybe a stable player can't. He could absolutely probably be successful again, but we'll see if he's willing to do that. He's an older coach. We know what the old coaches, especially at Michigan State University, love doing, and that's not changing. And it leads to them doing stupid things and burning down programs they built. But I'm definitely not salty about that. But you know, I like you. I love the move for both Calipari and for Kentucky,
Yeah.
and I think it does open up or. It would have opened up a really great, oh my God, we can play a hypothetical game, but a lot of the top guys have already kind of come out and said no.
Yeah.
I mean, it was funny because they didn't even really wait for an official like coaches list to drop. It was all rumors. Nate Oates comes out like a day after the rumor comes out. He's like, yeah, I'm here at Alabama. Dan Hurley comes out a day after the title, says, yeah, I'm not gonna why I'm chasing a three-peat. I don't care about Kentucky. I think you had what was his face that I don't think he was. I think it might have been Billy Donovan or Brad Stevens. There's one of the
Yeah.
NBA guys where it was like, yeah, I'm not interested in this. And it's like, well, There goes all of Kentucky's dream hires. So what are they
Yep.
left with now?
Got
And
Drew.
I was about to say they're left with Scott Drew, and I love that hire as well. He's done everything he can do at Baylor. He reached the peak, won a title with Baylor, which once again, that's not easy. That's not a
Right.
traditional basketball school. So I think for him, it's probably best if he kind of goes and moves on to a bigger tiered program.
Agreed.
I think he would be perfect.
I
That's
don't,
kind of.
it's still at with, I take like, especially the two college guys in Nate Oates and Dan Hurley. Maybe not so much Dan Hurley because he's winning and they're going to give him whatever he wants to stay. But like Nate Oates, and I know this is just another SEC move, and Alabama's got plenty of money there to keep him there. But I take sometimes you got to take a no with a grain of salt, I think. Like, it is far from the first time a college coach has said, no, I don't want, I'm not talking about that job or I'm not considering that job. And once Kentucky offers you double what they're going to pay anybody, any other coach in this, the highest coach makes, like I said, 7.5 million. You come out with 12, it's hard to say no to that.
No, you're correct. There's definitely some truth there. It's just I do think that it was interesting because they didn't even really wait to get contacted. They just kind of got ahead of it and said, "Yeah, I'm out." But you're
Yeah.
right. It's a little different trying to be proactive than actually seeing the amount of zeros on the check that they are showing you, and you're like, "Okay, well, wait a minute here." With that though, I did see a couple of the other names and I was kind of shocked about those. I saw Mark Few, Kelvin Sampson. I'm like, "What are you doing with that?" I just
I
I
don't
don't think that
I
fits.
briefly saw Mark Few and I think that was quickly denied. Is that like it's a weird one because can building a school like Gonzaga to what it is, and I know it wasn't 100% him, it was partly the guy before him, is impressive in its own right. But there's just something there where it just doesn't feel like Mark Few would ever really be like a fit at a
Yeah.
school like Kentucky.
And that's what I kind of was going to go with that is he is not a guy that, like you say, he does not seem like a Kentucky coach. And maybe that's because the Kentucky program that we knew was the Calipari flashiness. We're going to buy the recruits and we're going to do this and we're going to put 47 guys in the NBA in 15 years, which
And I'm
that's
gonna have the
outrageous.
slicked back hair and the fancy suit, but
Yeah, and like that was that doesn't seem like a Mark Few guy. I mean, same with Kelvin Sampson. I mean, he's older
yeah,
than
definitely.
Calipari, and I mean, like I said, I think what he's got going at Houston is kind of something that he needs to see through. They've got four straight second weekends, and they've kind of continuously fallen just short, whether it be through injury or running into a better team. And I don't think those are, again, I always go back to Scott Drew. I love that name for him. I think that's probably one of those kind of all parties. This is the best case scenario.
Yeah, I think that's where I want to end this with is that just like you do, maybe it's just so uncomfortable and so unnatural that a coach like that isn't either fired or retires. It's that he changes schools like that, especially at the school like Kentucky. So it kind of raises eyebrows, I think, a little more, gets a little more like WTF reaction where it genuinely should be done more, I think, because literally, Calipari gets his bag and gets to coach a good program still, while not being hated by Kentucky fans for leaving. Like a lot of coaches that leave for different jobs are hated. It seems like Kentucky gets to sing Calipari's praises before it really got ugly and they had to fire him. So,
Moving on
the
to the women's Final Four.
women's, yeah, the women's. Final four, South Carolina took care of business in the first game. And then Caitlin Clark and UConn played an absolute classic. I only got to watch a little bit of the first half before I was out with some extracurricular activities that night. But Caitlin Clark went off again. UConn had a good game plan for her, and it just kind of was Paige Bruckner is her name. The UConn girl
I
is
think
just
Beckers or
back.
Boykers. I don't know. I don't know how the EU pronunciation goes,
Okay.
but Paige Buckets, if you will.
Yeah, she was just simply not as good as Caitlin Clark. Caitlin Clark gets it done. Somewhat of a controversial ending from what I heard and saw. I mean, conspiracy theorists, you could definitely go down that line of like There's no way anyone in America didn't want you. I almost said USC, but it is USC. The other US, I always forget the USC. South Carolina and Iowa with Caitlin Clark in the final, and that's exactly what you got. 17.8 million viewers. That's more than any other men's game this year. It's more than most primetime NFL football games this year. It's just impressive, and it's a testament. I obviously, when you have an undefeated team, and they were a perfect team like that, and I'll get into it in a second on how they just did it to Caitlin Clark. But Caitlin Clark in general, just absolutely putting a sport on her back, watching it. I watched at least a play of every single game besides their 16 seed. I had never watched a women's game before this, just so anecdotally, my own self, just making people that would have never turned the game on, turn the game on. And hopefully it's a trend that can continue. And I think it can in this NIL era, to be honest. It maybe not to the scale that it required to get to the place it's at now. It took a su such a superstar like Caitlin Clark to do. But I definitely think it's possible to at least not completely fall off the face of the earth now that she's going to move on to pro ball. As for the actual game, Caitlin Clark, I think she only had 27 points, which is like 5 points below her average, believe it or not. But she did everything she could. It just wasn't one of those days where she couldn't hit everything. Like the LSU game, I don't know if you watched the LSU game because that was also after we recorded our last podcast. Their
I
Elite
did.
Eight
I
game to
did
get
watch
there.
the second half of that one, and I think she kind of went nuclear there.
She was making shot. It was a logo day. She had 40 points. She was making stuff from everywhere, and that was a very entertaining game where it just seemed like Caitlin, that like LSU just couldn't slow down Caitlin Clark when it got down to it. That's kind of how it was on the other end, and that just like South Carolina was such a good team that Caitlin Clark just like ran out of gas. And it's so easy to say because that's what we've said about all these games, but they kept it close for as long as they could. It just looked like South Carolina was just an unstoppable force that even the best player in women's basketball had no chance of doing, even on her best night.
Yeah, I wasn't able to watch those Final Four games, but I from what I heard from what you're saying right now, they were certainly more interesting than the men's, and I think a lot of it maybe had to do with some storylines that they were able to kind of go through. You did have the Angel Reese, LSU, Caitlin Clark, Iowa national title rematch in the Elite Eight. Then you got to watch the UConn, Iowa, Paige Becker, Boykers, Beckers against Caitlin Clark, and kind of UConn being that historical sleeping giant in the women's game. Becker's finally back from injury. And then, like you say, apparently it was a fantastic game with an interesting call at the end that maybe kind of rubbed people the wrong way. But you had a rematch of last year's Final Four game where Iowa beat South Carolina, and you had a rematch in the title. I just think that, as you kind of say this, there was just so much going on. To Caitlin Clark thing, maybe the kind of the final thing specifically, I was able to watch a little bit of the box score. I didn't catch any of the game, but she went stupid. I think she had 18 points in the first quarter, followed by only 9 in the last three, which is obviously, like you say, unfortunate, and she could only do so much, where she probably ran out of gas. And you sum it up perfectly, where it was a team against a player. South Carolina, it's funny because you mentioned them being undefeated. Nobody really talked about them because
No.
they didn't have Caitlin Clark, and because they don't have a Juju Watkins or an Angel Reese or a Paige Bueckers. No one really talked about them. But that South Carolina team could go, what, 8, 9, 10 players deep, and it's almost like the UConn where you run out of steam mentally, physically, tactically, because they're more well drilled than you are. They completed their revenge, finished that kind of title off. I think that's the third title for whether it's their head coach Dawn Staley. I think she had some great quotes that you were telling me about after the game, where she kind of thanked Caitlin Clark for everything she's done to kind of grow women's basketball. And where this leads me to is, I was talking to you beforehand. I think it's hilarious that for decades you've had WNBA players and WNBA athletes do nothing but beg for men's attention and interest and money. And they've almost and now the first time there's ever been an athlete that has been able to capture that interest and that attention from the male audience, which has really always been their biggest problem. And right away, as soon as it happens, you've got people coming out and trying to tear Caitlin Clark down, which I think is hilarious. I don't know if I think you told me about this. Diana Taurasi and Sue Bird both are coming out there. Well, yeah, it's great when you're playing against 18-year-old girls. Come try playing in the pros against women. Or yeah, it's great. Like it'll be so much harder. And you know what? They very well may be right, because we say the same thing in college football and college basketball, where I don't care how good Alabama or UConn is, they're not beating the Pistons or the old Cleveland Browns, because there is a difference in size, in just technical ability. But with that said, if your entire existence has been to complain about not getting interest, and the first time you start to get that interest from someone, why would you not continue to prop that up? Why would you go straight to trying to tear her down?
It's
I
pure
don't get
jealousy.
it.
It's
Yeah,
pure jealousy that they
completely
weren't the
agree.
ones to, that their generation couldn't do it and someone else can, and that they didn't get to experience the NIL era. And maybe it would have been different if they were in college when the NIL era and the kind of what would have, could have, should have, that I think everyone naturally goes through in their life at some point, in any context. But I just think it's that just pure, just like jealousy, and that their generation couldn't do it.
Yeah, no, I
Maybe I'm
completely agree.
wrong. Again, I don't
No,
know enough
you're not.
about these games. I'm one of these new fans, I guess, to really say. Maybe they have other reasons for it that are definitely reasonable, I guess, but that's just on face what I think.
No, I don't think you're wrong in the slightest, and I don't think you need to be a fan at all. You just need to have some common sense, and you need to understand how human behavior works. It's absolutely jealousy. What Caitlin Clark can do, no other woman has been able to do it. And to be honest, other than Steph Curry, no man has really been able to do it.
Well,
She's ridiculous.
it's the best point. The best example is how I think NIL has been so great for women's sports, because girls can use their platform now, whether it's on social media or in their athletics or a combination of the two, to get followings to the level that now what we have with Caitlin Clark, who's obviously so good on the court as well. And it really hasn't played out in college basketball the same way. And that I actually think you're probably losing fans in this era, if anything.
Are you talking about the men's side here?
Because there's so much movement. But yes,
Okay.
I'm just saying how interesting I think a part of the I obviously Caitlin Clark is a spark plug for this, but I also think NIL has helped the women's game
Yes.
gain the exposure that they need to grow. While it's NIL has also hindered the growth of the men's game. The same regulations, the same rules, the same idea has hindered the growth of the men's game. Because, to be honest, name a guy since COVID. I say COVID because Zion Williamson is the first men's
Yes.
basketball player that comes to mind
Yes.
that has just their brand in college, not turning what they turned into in the NBA, to the level of Caitlin Clark.
Nobody.
Nobody.
No, not in the slightest. I know. I mean, I talked about this with you on this podcast and offline with friends. She from for the last 18 months, she was the most recognizable college athlete, regardless of sport. And I will stand on that. I don't care about Caleb Williams. I don't care about Marvin Harrison. I don't care about Bronny James. She was the most recognizable collegiate athlete.
Yeah, I would agree.
And and kind of going back to the NIL thing, I don't know if it's just an NIL. I think a lot another issue is with at least in the men's side for basketball, you start to see the stars come from other avenues. You've got kids coming from Europe now. We've talked about the G Leagues taking top tier talents that used to just have to go to college because the other avenues don't exist. And I think that's maybe where the biggest issues for the men's game have come, is the fact that you don't have the star power again. You mentioned Zion Williamson. That's the last superstar in college basketball. I mean, what you
Like
had,
brand. It doesn't even have to be superstar, but brand. Which usually coincides with being superstar.
And I think a lot of that is due to the fact that, like I said, you've got the NBA stars coming from different avenues now. You mentioned the fact that there is no more continuity, so you don't even know who's on your team next year unless you're just a lunatic follower. You don't know who these guys, where they're coming from, what they are. I mean, prime example, Dalton Knecht, sensational player, but coming from where? Colorado State, or was it Northern Colorado or something?
It's Northern Colorado.
And, like, what? And again, that's good for them because you know what? We talked about this, like, we also talked about this offline with friends. Like, it's good that those guys now have an avenue to get to programs and showcase what they can do and give themselves more chances to get into the NBA. But from a truly collegiate basketball standpoint, it does hurt that you don't have year over year the same guys staying for 3 or 4 years to be able to build that attachment to them the way you could with a Caitlin Clark for the last 3 or 4 years. Or you could with the way some of these women's athletes can stay in the same spot and just grow.
It's interesting because it's just interesting how two very similar, the same sport in very different spots can be affected by the same rules so differently, I guess, is just my pure curiosity with what's happened over the last 3 years between the two games.
I agree. It is a fascinating topic. It will be interesting to see maybe what happens now with Caitlin Clark as she moves to the WNBA, because you know, as much as we just set up how these people have begged for interest, no one's ever really watched the WNBA before at a high enough level. At least I haven't. Maybe this changes with Caitlin Clark, or maybe it's one of those things where, because it's no she's no longer associated with a college that people are familiar with, it might be a little bit harder to kind of get into what she's doing, because Iowa against South Carolina seems like an easier thing to follow than the Liberty against the Sparks, because you don't know what those are.
Well, that comes from the fact that, and I know this was not always the same for the women's game, that they haven't had, this is only like what year one or two that every game was broadcasted on an ESPN platform. But I also think it's now on the WNBA and it's to market Caitlin Clark,
Yes,
to make
it
people
is.
want to continue to watch her. You can't have all your games on ESPN Plus on Tuesdays at 6 o'clock and expect everyone to still follow Caitlin Clark. There's got to be something else that you do to promote the game. I don't know what that is. I mean, I know some simple solutions that I wouldn't even know how to go about making them work. Otherwise, I'd work for the WNBA right now. But it's now on the WNBA to take advantage of the
Yes.
superstar that she is. And make sure that it helps keep your product or grow your product now as
And
professional women's basketball.
yeah, and the last, I guess the last thing I really have to say before we start kind of maybe turning in circles is not just Caitlin Clark. Angel Reese is going. Paige Bueckers probably is going, but because of
Is
the
Angel
injury,
Reese going? I know she's only a junior.
she is going. I know, again, Paige Bueckers, I don't know because she did have the ACL
Injuries.
injuries, so what she's doing, but she's there. You've got superstars going. It's time for you to sit there and utilize the fact that for the first time ever, the primary audience of sports, which is men, tuned into women's college basketball. Take advantage of what women's college basketball did for you, and like you say, market them. Don't be the NHL. Don't be the MLB. Market your stars.
Love it. I think that's a good place to end this conversation. As far as college basketball, I think
Yes.
that's so our next topic is the Masters. Just the granddaddy of them all, as they say. It's nostalgia. It's so much fun, and it's so interesting as far as TV rights, because the Masters owns their own product and kind of sells out what they need to TV wise. That's why you get this like beautiful app that is so easy to follow that like makes it so profitable at work. It's just well done. They're obviously so hush hush about everything. It's seen as like just the perfect place for the golf land. And I always think that's so fascinating, whether you like it or not. But as far as the actual event, Scottie Scheffler is a +400 favorite right now. There's only been one other guy that's been less than a +450 favorite, and his name was Tiger Woods. It hasn't been one that low since 2011, Tiger Woods. Now, Tiger Woods was that much or lower. 2001, 2002, 2003, 2004, 2005, 2006, 2007, 2008, 2009, 2010, 2011. But it's been 13 years since we've had that. As far as the rest of the crew, Rory and John Rahm kind of round out at 10 to 1 and 11 to 1. And there's kind of quite a bit of a drop off as far as odds wise.
Even for
They're the
Brooks?
big. Brooks is currently fifth at plus 1600.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think that's tremendous value for him. The way he plays in majors, he's kind of watching some of his press conferences today. Not only is he fully healthy, but he's fully in Brooks form as far as the cocky confidence he has after having a great year in the majors last year. And this is his event to win. I think this is the one he wants the most. He obviously still needs this and a British to complete the Grand Slam, but he's going to be in it to the last day. You know that. He's played well here in the past. He has 2 second place finishes in 2019 when Tiger won it, and then last year when he blew it on Sunday to Jon Rahm. Jon Rahm's an interesting one as far as his comments this week. He's made a lot of, I think, most of the headlines as far as comments. Obviously, he's the biggest name that jumped ship to LIV since we last left the season in 2023. His comments are more along the lines of kind of voicing frustration that there hasn't been enough movement in terms of the agreement between LIV and the PGA and mergers, which kind of it was kind of always in the background assumed that Rahm was doing this and went moved to LIV under the assumption that they were going to merge together. And he's kind of made that clear and that he's somewhat frustrated and maybe a little unhappy. Maybe that is some media putting words in his mouth, but there's definitely some frustration as far as where that agreement is at. Questions of whether he's played enough competitive golf. I think that's BS. He's an angry competitor. He's like a Brooksy. He's got that dog in him. I think he'll be fine and right up there with it. Some other big names, some kind of sleeper names I threw out there. Victor Hovland has played not very good golf in 2024. Look for him. He was in contention for all four majors last year. Is this Ludvig Åbergs? You saw him kind of debut in the Ryder Cup. He's a young 20-year-old, 21-year-old kid, whatever he is. He's an absolute stud. Joaquin Niemann has been playing great golf in everywhere but the PGA Tour. Look out for him this weekend. Matsuyama has had a very good year this year. Obviously, a past champion, knows this place well, has played here well in the past. And my sleeper pick, not named Scottie Scheffler, is actually, I don't know if you could call him a sleeper because he's fourth in odds, is Xander Schauffele. He's had a very good year. He's only finished outside of the top 10 once so far in eight events this year. He's kind of the best player in the world to not win a major, I think.
Oh, yeah.
And I think he had three top 10 finishes last year in the four majors. So he's there every weekend. Look for him to kind of be my sleeper pick as far as Augusta.
Yeah, the Xander thing's interesting that A, he's that high in odds, but then I guess when you think about it, you're absolutely correct.
Fifth best player in the world. Oh, on world golf rankings, he's number five in the world, fourth odds in this. So it's not too far off.
Yeah, but that doesn't factor the LIV guys in anymore, at least at the higher level. But
True, true.
what I was gonna say that makes him interesting is like you mentioned the top tens and the not having won a major. You're absolutely. He seems to be there every single year, whether it be top 10 or whether it be majors or even PGA Tour events. And I feel like I never see him win anything. Now, I
Yeah.
don't. I'm pretty sure he's not winless for his career on the PGA Tour, but I feel like I haven't seen one.
No, it's a good point, and other than the players this year, I can't think of him choking any of them. Him and Wyndham Clark both kind of choked to Scottie Scheffler in this year's
Yes.
players. But other than that, I can't even think of him choking, even though he's been there so much.
You know, it's more, it's like I wouldn't want to call it a full choke either. It's just usually one of those where he's there for 3 days, and then it seems like on the 13th hole of a Sunday, he just not necessarily falls apart, but can't get enough birdies to catch up to whoever he's trying to chase.
Yeah, he
He
has seven PGA Tour wins. His majors records are Masters second, US Open second, the Open second, and the PGA's is only 10th. So, oh, he's been, no kidding, he's been there for all.
Yeah, that's crazy, but yeah, that's an interesting one. So now this is just me throwing out just a name that I've recently heard, and by no means would I expect him to be good, just because I don't think he's probably played this course before. But this Akshay Bhatia guy, that I think he won last week or the week before. I think he's got two wins so far this
Did
season.
you see how he won on Sunday? You might have missed that.
No, I didn't.
So he's an interesting cat, and I think you know his story too. So he needed this win on Sunday to get into Augusta, and he was on the 18th hole. It was him and I can't McCarthy. They were tied on eight going into 18. McCarthy hit like a 10 footer to put the pressure on Bhatia, who had like a 9 footer basically. He hit the 9 footer, pumped his fist so hard, he tore, he put the shoulder out of the socket. They had to pop, he they had to pop it back in so he could play a playoff hole. McCarthy had 7 birdies on the back nine to catch up to Bhatia. So Bhatia was like choking, and then like he hits this putt to force a playoff. McCarthy's second shot in on the first hole pumps it in the water after having 7 birdies on the front nine. With his popped in shoulder, Bhatia makes par and wins and goes to the Masters.
That's, I did not see that. I did not. That's outrageous. But yeah, good for him. I know that's kind of one of the young guys that, like, he seems like he always kind of enjoys the golf. But I don't know if, I mean, you gave your quote unquote sleeper pick. Is that the pick you're gonna go with for the winner, the way we kind of did last year when we talked about who we think is gonna do that? Or
No, it's Scottie Scheffler. As long as he doesn't have, as long as his wife doesn't decide to give birth a month early, it's Scottie Scheffler.
yeah, I want to sit here and be able to like say something different, but he's just that much better at everyone else than at golf right now. It's, I'd have to say the same thing, and a part of me hopes that like someone can catch fire or play well enough. It's something like this that the next time a major comes around and we talk about it, it's not just the same response where we both say Scottie Scheffler and move on.
I think the only other storyline I have, in, as far as it goes back to the big three, is Rory going on year 10 now without a major. This kind of starts his regime. Obviously, this is the only one he needs to for the Grand Slam. He's missed two cuts in the last 3 years at this event. Every other major, he's been right in the hunt for. We'll see if kind of his woes, I guess, if you could call him. He did finish tied for second 2 years ago. But I still say two cuts in 3 years, or two missed cuts in 3 years after it looked awful last year. Does he continue his woes at, I almost said Wimbledon, but Augusta?
I don't know if he'll continue his woes, but I don't see anything. I don't think he's played consistent enough golf this year to compete at the highest level with a Scottie Scheffler.
It is interesting because normally our previews of majors has a little bit of golf course talk too. But Augusta is like, I haven't really, they obviously changed tee boxes, so some of the tee shots look different for them than in years past. But other than that, all I've heard is, yeah, it's firm and fast as it usually is. It's supposed to rain Thursday, so that could change it going into the weekend, making it even more playable because the rest of the weekend is great weather for them too. So it should be a fairly playable Masters.
Yeah, I guess
Oh, you know who we're missing?
who
Tiger Woods.
why when we talk about him quitting again on the
Well, that's what I
21st
want to
hole.
say. What's your expectation? What would be a success for Tiger for
Continuing
you?
the streak of made cuts, I guess, or maybe even finishing two rounds, whether he makes or misses a cut, because he doesn't do that
I think it's
anymore.
literally, yeah, I think it's literally if he can finish Thursday, Friday, whether he makes cut or not, that's enough. That's like, I want to see him do that because it's been, he was able to do that last year. Obviously, he made the cut. And then I think it was super cold on Saturday
He
and
just said,
he
screw it.
like mid round, I think. But this year has been even worse. He tried the Genesis and only lasted one day. Wasn't able to go for the Players. Seems like he has kind of voiced that he might only be playing Augusta this year too. So if he can get through two rounds, I think that would be relatively successful. I'm not one of those crazy Tiger people that think, oh, well, he said he'll only play if he thinks he has a chance. Like, the guy's a psychopath. He's always going to think he has a chance. He just doesn't anymore.
And I agree with you. Turn 50 or 55, go to the senior tour and go ride around carts with John Daly
Yep.
again.
Anything else on the Masters?
No, I'm about ready to wrap this up.
All right. For those who tuned in, thanks for coming. Kind of mixed bag of topic today. So always love those mixed bags. I guess next week we'll have a Masters recap.
We should start doing NFL draft stuff because the
Yeah,
NFL draft
that
will
will
be
be
coming
next
up.
week or 2 weeks.
Because I think we have 2 weeks, but we
Yeah.
have 2 more weeks until it happens. So maybe we look at some prospects for next week and then maybe do some mock drafts the week after. But that'll be neither here nor there. We'll figure that out over the course of the week. To those who made it through all of this, thank you very much. I'm actually kind of proud that we got an hour out of this considering there was minimal things to talk about and it was more of a, like you say, a mixed bag. From myself, as always, we'll say go green, I guess, for the first time in a while, but
Also,
go
thanks
green.
for waiting on this episode for a couple days, guys.
Yes.
All right, bye.